You are listening to the Brighton Book Club on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. I'm sure I'm joined by many people in the city who are disappointed that Pride is, very understandably and sensibly, cancelled this year. So I thought this month we would talk about LGBT and queer books. I am joined this month. I've got a really, really exciting group of guests. So firstly, we've got Erica Gillingham from Gaze the Word Bookshop in London. Juno Roach, she's just written their new book, Gender Explorers. Jen Thompson from Cypher Press, which is a new queer publishing house. And I'm joined by queer trans book blogger, Jay. Our book club book this month is Samra Habib's We Have Always Been Here, which is a beautifully written memoir about being a queer Muslim woman. As ever, we love to hear from you. Send us an email at btnbookclub@gmail.com and follow us on Instagram at btnbookclub. So one thing that came through from talking to all my guests this month was the real need to read diversely and to read, you know, to find your own experience in books, but also to grow empathy and find out about other people's experiences. Because at the end of the day, if you love books, you love stories, and everyone has a story to tell. So without further ado, here is Erica Gillingham. Welcome to the virtual Brighton Book Club studio. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a delight to be here.
So can you just tell me a bit about yourself to start, and a bit about Gaze the Word, which is the iconic bookshop that you work in up in London?
Yeah, sure, of course. I am Erica Gillingham. I have lived in London for over a decade, but I'm originally from California. I moved here to be with my wife, who is British, and did my postgraduate work here. So my master's and PhD were both in queer children's and young adult literature, broadly speaking. And I've been at the bookshop for the last 2 years, which has been amazing. I love it here. And the history of the bookshop is we're 41 years old this year. We opened in January 1979. We were set up by a group of gay socialists as a lesbian and gay bookshop, but also stocked feminist books. And over the years, our stock has grown to include books, nonfiction and fiction and poetry across the LGBTQ spectrum.
Amazing. Can I ask you about your PhD, please? Because this is such an interesting subject, and why you decided to choose to write it about lesbian love stories in young adult and graphic novels.
Yeah, of course. So I was interested in how love stories were told in same-sex relationships, and initially started looking at both gay and lesbian relationships in literature. And I was specifically interested in young adult novels and comics, because the stories that we read when we're younger can be so much more impactful. And I was seeing a sharp increase and change in the kinds of stories that were being told for that audience. A lot more happy endings, a lot more variety of representation in terms of bisexuality as well, and different genres. So I ended up narrowing it down just to look at female same-sex relationships. And it was really inspired by books like The Miseducation of Cameron Post by Emily Danforth. It was inspired by the whole canon of work by Melinda Lowe, who wrote Ash and Huntress and some science fiction novels and a thriller. She's got a historical novel coming out next year. I'm a big fan. And also the graphic memoirs by artists like Tilly Walden and Maggie Thrash, who were telling their stories of coming out in the way that Ariel Scragg did, and the way that Alison Bechdel did, but with a different kind of slant on it. And I was really, really just curious about what was going on, what was happening, and how that audience was responding.
So when you were growing up, Erica, in California, did you read any queer literature? Was it around? Could you see yourself in any of it?
Absolutely not. I didn't come out until I was in my late teens and early 20s. And in my rural town of about 7,500 people, I wouldn't have even known where to look for a book like that. And so really just was mostly reading kind of classics and identifying with a lot of the kind of female characters and women writers of that time, big into poetry then as well. But it was really The Miseducation of Cameron Post. Reading that book was the first time that I saw part of my experience being from the rural United States reflected back at me. So that novel is the novel I wish I had read as a teenager, because I think I just would have related to it in so many different ways.
So, Erica, why do you feel that LGBT books are so important? This is a bit of a silly question, really, but also, and why do you think it's important, or do you think it's important for cis heterosexual people to read queer literature?
Oh, yeah. So, massive topic, but in general, I just think we as human beings, we love stories, and we are always telling ourselves stories. Ali Smith speaks much more eloquently than I about that in her kind of interviews, and it's in her books as well. And we want to see, you know, lives reflected back at us. And when we do find those representations of ourselves, whether it be sexuality or gender or both, reflected back at us in a way that we relate to, it just can be so affirming, it can be inspiring, it can be just heartening and reassuring to have that. And I think the more broader representation we have, the better for that. And I mean, there are stories like any other stories about humans. So I think everyone should read stories about queer people, regardless of how they might personally identify in terms of their identity, as particularly around sexuality or gender. And so much can be gained, as I'm sure you know, very know well from your own reading, broad reading taste with this book club, that stories are for everyone.
Yeah, they are, absolutely. So recently, what books have you seen people really responding well to in the shop? So what's been selling really well, and what books have really been capturing people's imaginations recently?
There's been some definitely novels that have been flying off the shelves. So the debut novel Rainbow Milk by Paul Mendes, the paperback edition of This Brutal House by Niven Govinden, that's been flying off the shelves. I'm trying to think of a couple others. Patsy by Nicole Dennis Benn is quite popular, and it's a personal favorite of mine. That's in paperback at the moment. And some YA novels. We've got Hideous Beauty by William Hussey and Wranglestone by Jeremy Charlton. Those have been going well. As has Bernadine Evaristo's Girl, Woman, Other, for lots of very good reasons. But that's been selling well too.
What's the best book you've read recently? Best queer book you've read recently, perhaps even in lockdown?
Yeah, so I really struggled to read during lockdown, but it was historical fiction that got me reading again. And that started with the debut novel by an American writer, C. Pam Zhang. And she's written a novel that's set in the California Gold Rush. It focuses on the children of broadly speaking, a Chinese immigrant family during that period of California's history. And I just thought it was really beautiful storytelling. It kind of moves backwards and forwards in ways that aren't necessarily expected when you set out. And so that got me reading again, which was wonderful. And then that kind of carried on to The Animals of Lockwood Manor by Jane Healy, which is another debut novel. This one set in 1939 at the start of World War II. And a woman who essentially works for the Natural History Museum takes part of the mammal collection to a manor house in the home counties. Mysterious things ensue. I'll leave it at that.
They both sound amazing. So the last time I saw you, which feels like 5,000 years ago, at Gaze the Word, I said, right, Erica, prescribe me a book, please. What shall I read? And you suggested We Have Always Been Here. So this is our book club book for this month. And I'm going to be talking about it later on the show. But I would love to know what you loved about this book.
Oh, it's just such a fantastic memoir. 2019, I was really on a memoir kick. So I was reading lots of particularly queer people writing about their lives. And Samra does it in such a way that you're right there in her story. And it's a very light touch. And you get just enough of her childhood to really understand where she was coming from and what those experiences were like as a child. And then she moves to Canada, as you all know, as a religious refugee. And I just thought the way that she just delivered that information so succinctly, but told this really beautiful story and very honest about the kind of balancing that she did over the course of her life thus far to balance kind of identity and family and religion and faith. And it was just so beautiful. And so when I heard that she was coming over, I recommended it to everyone. And when I heard that she was coming over to the UK for a tour in early 2020, I was desperate to have her stop by the bookshop. So Samara was actually, she came by the bookshop, and it was the last event that we had before lockdown. And she was interviewed by a writer and activist, Miriam Bibi Din, from, I believe, Birmingham. And they came down and interviewed Samara, and it was just a really joyous evening, and a really special event to have just before everything shut down.
Yeah, absolutely. You really remember those last kind of big social things that we did before we were all encapsulated in our own minds.
Totally.
Erica, thank you so much for your time today. I could talk to you for hours. How can we find and follow you, and how can we find and follow Gaze the Word too?
So for myself, I am Erica Reads Queer on Instagram and Twitter. The bookshop on Facebook and Twitter is Gaze the Word, and on Instagram, we're at Gaze the Word Bookshop.
Juno Roach, welcome to the Brighton Book Club. I'm so honoured to have you here in our virtual studio from Spain. How are you?
I'm brilliant, thank you. And it's lovely to be there. I adore Brighton, so I adore being in the Brighton Virtual Book Club.
So, Juno, can you just give me and our listeners an introduction to yourself and your work? Because you have been writing and working in activism and for various charities for many years.
Okay, so I am principally now a writer. I suppose I started to do, my kind of career in terms of activism and stuff goes back a really long way. I mean, it goes back to the kind of late 80s, early 90s when I was part of a group of people that set up an LGBTQI. I mean, literally it was, even then, it was kind of revolutionary. You set up a housing cooperative in London for people that were being kicked out of their homes because of kind of homophobia, transphobia, lesphobia. And we ran a housing association. That was way back then. And then at every point that I've kind of noticed inequality, it's kind of made me really angry and made me kind of do stuff about it. I was a teacher, so I taught for about 10 years and then slowly became a writer, and now I write full time. And I've just finished the book that's just come out a couple of weeks ago called Gender Explorers. Was a final book of a trilogy of books in which I kind of feel like I captured how trans and non-binary and fluid and gender non-conforming people are living today. You know, a kind of happy, positive books, not that, you know, not trying to force them to be, but I wanted to capture the stories of the people that I knew, people that were having great times, people that were having good careers, and people that were really working hard to kind of live their best lives. And the final book, Gender Explorers, which is the one I think we're going to talk about today, is just come out, in which I just interviewed some of the youngest people in the country who were transitioning or socially transitioning or who were kind of grappling with gender.
This is an amazing book. I felt so lucky to read it, and it definitely, I mean, as someone that kind of thinks of themselves as like relatively free thinking and liberal, you know, lives in Brighton and all of that, there is always things to learn and always ways that your mind can be changed, and there is no better way, I think, to learn than from the people that are actually going through it. You know, there's a lot we talked about in the last episode as well. We had a kind of debate about own voices, and there's nothing more informative than hearing from the people at the front line. So Juno, could you just read a little bit from the about the book section so that listeners can get a sense of the kind of structure of this book, because it's quite an interesting, different format.
Yeah. Okay. So the book's format is I interview verbatim as many young people as I can possibly find. I'll just read you the opening couple of paragraphs from about the book. This book isn't about proving or disproving, believing or disbelieving, challenging or not challenging the validity of trans children and their parents or carers. These young people are me, and for a brief summer term in 1972, I was them. They know their truth. I know our truth, and no one can tell them or me otherwise. This book is concerned only with listening to young trans and non-binary people tell their stories without judgment or adult intervention, hearing them offer advice. As adults, we've had years of gender conditioning that makes us want to order the world in a way that we understand. But this is not necessarily a way that works for us or for others. This book is a recipient of these young people's joy and also a conduit for hearing and learning about the difficulties that they might face, arising principally, I'm sure, from the discrimination and disbelief meted out to them by disbelieving adults, who are shaped by the narrow confines of gender expectations, stereotypes and binaries.
It's so succinct and so clear. There's such clarity in this book. And like I said, I think everybody should read it. And I want to talk a bit to you about, as someone who is an ex-educator, you know, in schools, about the curriculum and the kind of books that you read growing up and the kind of books that you think kids should be reading now. This book should be in every school library. Yeah. Can you talk a bit about the curriculum?
Yeah, I agree with you, because I mean I was a primary school and a secondary school teacher for about 10 years, and the curriculum still is completely heteronormative. It's very white, it's very binary, and it makes an awful lot of young people feel like they fail from the get-go. I mean, if you look at the books in most libraries, they still have a notion of a two-parent family, a mum and a dad, and a very normative makeup. And dad is always taller than mum, and the elder brother is always taller than the sister or the brothers and sisters. You know, there's like people are ranked in terms of height and in terms of importance. Mm-hmm. A lot of the books for girls are about caring and sharing, and a lot of the books for boys are about going out there and, you know, climbing mountains. And, you know, that still is the way it is. And there's some great books being written. There really is. There's some great young adult authors. Juno Dawson, for example, from Brighton. I mean, there are a kind of whole host of people. But, you know, we've still got to kind of tackle a curriculum which is kind of based on a binary way of thinking about the world, with a kind of separate line for boys and a separate line for girls, and where they still have many kind of seating plans which are based on boy girls, with the girls kind of apparently looking after the boys' behaviour. You know, we've got so much to do to kind of break down that kind of binary model that just makes so many people feel like they fail. So, you know, and if it didn't, we wouldn't have such kind of like such droves of unhappy children. We wouldn't have so many young girls thinking about what they're eating by the time they get to, by the time they kind of leave primary school, thinking about their weight. We wouldn't have so many boys being so kind of like unhappy because the kind of weight of masculinity that's thrust upon them is just so much to live up to. I mean, if we could just free them up a bit from that and say, listen, you can make gender do what you need it to do. And that's all I suppose I did in the book. That's why it's called Gender Explorers. It's just young people exploring gender and making it fit them so that they can feel happy and comfortable and at ease in their body, because that's what we all want. We get one life. It's a relatively short life. It goes really quickly. We should be able to feel comfortable in our own bodies.
I read in an interview with you, Juno, that you were moving away from the terms of trans man, trans woman, etc., and just going with trans. Can you speak a bit to that and about that as a kind of gender exploring as a concept, and rather than creating another binary of trans men and trans women?
Well, for me, and it really is just me, I mean, everyone will identify differently, but for me, the instant I put another word onto trans, the instant I put trans woman or trans femme or transgender or trans, you know, the instant I added another word, it felt like there was more work to do. Because the one word that we've been told as trans people that we should avoid is the word trans. We were told that that was the kind of dirty secret word. We should somehow, we should disappear, because the old adage was that we would disappear, we would leave our jobs, we would go away, we would transition, and then we would come back like a butterfly. and no one would ever know that we'd ever been born in a different, with a different kind of gender presentation. And it felt to me that the only word, that the shortest word actually, trans, had the biggest space. It felt kind of spacious and vast and wide, and like there was so much freedom. If I just use the word trans, I could be whatever I wanted to be under that word. I could really occupy gender however I wanted to occupy it. And it changes. It's a kind of fluid thing, gender. It's not a static thing. That's where we create problems, is when we aren't exploring how we feel. So I feel much more comfortable now at this age using they, them as pronouns than I would have done using she and her. And up till a few years ago, or even a few months ago, people would call me all different kinds of pronouns, and I wouldn't kind of say anything. And then I realized, actually, no, I feel much more comfortable with they, them, because it fits with that notion that I can explore space. And so for me, it is trans, just my label is trans. I don't use any other label, and my pronouns are they, them. And that seems to give me the most space in the world to occupy exactly as I want to occupy.
When you were growing up, Juno, when was the first time that you felt that you could see yourself or a version of yourself in literature?
Oh, God, I just didn't.
You didn't?
I mean, I suppose on one level, I kind of, so I had this moment in 1972 where I kind of effectively came out at school. And I tell the story of it in the opening of this book. And I suppose when I was able to just be myself, I suppose I saw myself in every character in every book, in every character that I related to in every book. But as soon as they said to me, no, you can't be yourself, well, then if I couldn't be myself, then I couldn't be any character. I couldn't be anyone. So, it's taken, in some kind of senses, the reason why I wrote this trilogy of books was to capture the stories of people that I felt were like me, or I was like them. And in some senses, to create a kind of bank of kind of transness that exists in literature, that isn't about us being sad, isn't about us just being, it's not a book just about going from A to B. I was born this and then I had surgery and became this. It's not that kind of book. And it's not a book that kind of tries to take apart. What my books, I think, have done is try to celebrate transness in a way that I never found myself in books after the time that people said that I wasn't that thing. When people said to me at primary school, no, you can't be. I remember my teacher said to me, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, I want to be pregnant like my mum. And my teacher said to me, well, that can't ever happen because you can't become pregnant. Boys can't become pregnant. And I remember just thinking, oh, okay. And then, so then I felt like I wasn't in my body anymore, because that's what I truly thought I wanted to happen. And, I was that young. Obviously, I can look back at it now and I'm not silly. I know that I didn't have a womb. I knew that whatever. But that was honestly my kind of first response to someone saying, what do you want to do when you get older? So I think it's really difficult. The instant you detach somebody from expressing their best self, then they can't identify with anything in the world because you've told them that they're wrong. And one of the great things about the young people in this book is that, it just goes to show when they're allowed just to be themselves and supported to be themselves and celebrated for being themselves, they get on and they just live happy, aspirational, dreamy lives. So, yeah.
On that note, Juno, thank you so much for joining us today on the Brighton Book Club. If every child in the country, as well as reading Gender Explorers and your other books, could read another book, what would that be? What would you recommend?
Are you asking me about a trans author? So
it could be any about identity, really, just about finding your identity. So it could be a trans author. It could be any author.
Okay, so I would say, so I'd have two recommendations. I'd say for any young adult book, in terms of anything by Juno Dawson, is going to have a plethora of representation in there, so you're going to find yourself in there. And one of my kind of all-time favorite books is by Judith Kerr, which is Hitler Stole Pink Rabbit, which is a book which kind of just beautifully documents the notion of a kind of fraught existence So I would say those two books. I'm sure that there are many more. There really are. But I mean, I think it's really important to retain, to not just have to read a book that's just about yourself. I think we should appear in books as characters. But I mean, I think we're at that point in history whereby that's beginning to happen with people like Juno Dawson's book. The Black Flamingo. I mean, it's just, Dean Atta. I mean, there's so many books that are great books that are just coming out.
Amazing. Juno, how can we find and follow you and stay up to date with your work?
The easiest way is on Twitter, which is at JustJuno1, or on Instagram, JustJuno. I think I am on Instagram. So either of those two ways there is the kind of simplest way of kind of following me and finding out. That's where I normally post events that are happening.
Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me on. It was a complete delight. Thank you.
Jen Thompson, welcome to the Brighton Book Club. Please can you introduce yourself and talk a bit about Cypher?
Sure. So my name is Jen Thompson and I'm a co-founder and publisher at Cypher Press. I've worked in publishing in some capacity for over about 10 years now. I started as a bookseller in the fiction department at Foyles, Charing Cross Road. And then I've done various other sort of editorial editing jobs. And I currently, for the last 6 years, work in book distribution, Turnaround Publisher Services, which is a thing I love to do because I get to work with all kinds of publishers, sort of from Penguin Random House to small indie presses. And I suppose my main job is to sell their books into the book trade, so to bookshops, to online retailers, things like that.
What made you decide to set up Cypher Press? Where did you find the gap in the market? And what is the niche of Cypher?
Turnaround has always had a very, very strong relationship to sort of minority publishing. It started off publishing lots of small black presses in the 80s and 90s, and also lots of gay and lesbian presses. And it's really cool to look back over all their archives and catalogues and things and see the kind of publishing that used to happen. But it just feels like it's all sort of mostly disappeared now. There's not really that much left, especially not dedicated gay and lesbian publishing. I suppose just sort of working with so many great presses all the time, sort of independent publishing, and being so inspired by them, we just thought it was quite a good time to launch Cypher. And we wanted to... I suppose our main focus is that we wanted to start a new queer publishing house that reflected the way our communities have evolved, because there's so many more identities now than just gay and lesbian, and we would like to publish stories to give those minority voices, to give them more of a platform, I suppose.
So if someone's listening to this, Jen, and they're thinking, yep, okay, this is all well and good, you know, I'm glad that you've started an LGBT plus press, but they're straight and they've only ever read books by straight people. Why do you think that straight identifying people should be reading books by the LGBT community?
I mean, I think people should be reading all kinds of books outside of their own experience. I mean, I suppose in many ways, I think that's exactly what books are for. So you can learn about other identities and cultures and people. I also think maybe it's disingenuous to think that readers can only enjoy readers about people like them. I would like to hope that people will read all kinds of books, and that there's actually like quite a hunger for different stories. It's something that we've seen quite a lot of since we launched the press. Even my mum's been reading the stuff that we're publishing, which has been amazing, and really enjoying it as well.
So you set up Cypher during the pandemic, didn't you, or just before? So can you talk a bit about that experience?
I mean, sure, it hasn't really been an ideal time to launch a new business, I suppose. It's been, because we're so small and because we're so new, I don't think it's going to have affected us as badly as it could do some sort of slightly more established small presses. But it's been disappointing in many ways. We were going to bring our author Jess Arndt over from LA this summer to do some events at the ICA. We had something lined up at Gays the Word, which we've sort of had to postpone. You know, things like that have been a bit of a blow, because I suppose it's nice when you launch a new thing to have some sort of physical launch event. So that's been a bit of a shame, but at the same time, you know, we've just postponed things. They're still going to happen. It's just going to happen a bit later than normal. I think the weirdest thing about it is just launching a press when you have, you know, you want your books to sell, and there haven't been any bookshops open to sell them in. But you know, things are reopening now, but bookshops are starting to order, so you know, it's not as bad as it could have been.
Absolutely. So during the pandemic, your first book came out, which was a small anthology called There Will Always Be Nights Like This. Can you talk a bit about this, please?
Sure. So we'd always had this plan when we launched the press to, as well as publishing our paperbacks, to do sort of a series of chapbooks to introduce and showcase new writing. And I mean, we hadn't really planned to do it so soon. It's something that we thought about maybe starting next year. But being as we were in lockdown, and being as we did have some time, and it just, you know, there was so many conversations about what people are missing, about not having the physical spaces to go into anymore, that we just thought it would be interesting to launch the series then with writing about being queer in lockdown, I suppose. It's been a really, really brilliant experience. We got so many amazing submissions, like too many. We couldn't publish them all. It's really interesting to see the common sort of themes that people were coming out with. And we wanted to sort of publish it to help out in some way during the pandemic. So we're giving all profits to the Outside Project, which is London's first LGBTQ homeless shelter. So that's been really good, and readers have been great. We sold out within 24 hours, well, just over 24 hours of the first print run of that. So,
oh my gosh, that is amazing.
Yeah, it was really, really, really good.
So so the next book you have coming out called Large Animals, I've just pre-ordered it. You talk a little bit about it and how you came to publish it? You know, what was the journey of publication?
Sure. Well, the book was actually published in the US by Catapult a couple of years ago, but it didn't have any distribution here at all. So I read it a while ago and just absolutely loved it, and just thought it sets the exact tone for Cypherpress and what we hope to achieve with Cypherpress. Like, Jess Arndt is an incredible writer. Their sentences are just so, so good. And the way they use language is almost, I don't know. Well, I suppose Michelle T described the book as almost supernatural, which I think is a good descriptor. But I suppose the book itself, it aligns with a lot of conversations around gender that are happening within our community and sometimes outside of it. And it's just, yeah, it just sets a really good strong tone for the press, as well as just the fact that we absolutely love it. I would say it's about bodies. It's about the experience of being a human being and living inside a body, and how not straightforward that is a lot of the time. And I suppose that is quite, it's very relevant to the queer experience, but it's relevant to lots of experiences. I mean, everybody lives inside a body, and everybody has to figure out how to feel comfortable doing that. So that's ultimately what it's about. It's also just really funny and weird, kind of messy sometimes, very, very sharp, very smart, and very astute. Yeah, we're really lucky and thrilled to be publishing it here.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to it. We'll definitely review it on the show. Jen, as a reader, what are your favourite books by or for the LGBT community?
Oh, there's so many. In recent years, the two books that really stand out as things that I personally have loved have been Paul Takes the Form of a Mortal Girl by Andrea Lawler, and Confessions of the Fox by Jordi Rosenberg. We've also really loved Freshwater by Akwae Kemsi. And we have loved recently Rainbow Milk by Paul Mendes, published by Dialogue.
What are you looking for at Cypher? So do you have an open submissions window? If any authors are listening to this thinking, I'd love to send you my work, can they?
Not at the moment, no. At the moment we've sort of commissioned all we can really have the time to publish until halfway through next year. We had a submissions window open earlier on in the year, but we are hoping to reopen submissions for the second half of 2021 and into 2022 at the beginning of this year, maybe in the autumn time. I suppose what we'd say is what we're really looking for is just adult fiction and non-fiction. We're very open to any genre, as long as it sort of would fit into the literary bracket, I'd say.
Jen, why should people buy books from independent publishers?
Independent publishing and independent publishers are really the risk takers, I think, the ones that the innovators, the ones who find the the best new writing out there. I'm really lucky at Turnaround to work with so many, and I'm just constantly inspired by the things that they're doing. And just the drive and the effort and the energy that people pour into these very small businesses. So I think if you know, you're not only supporting new writing, but you're also supporting businesses that are really sort of publishing on the vanguard. It's always been that way, hasn't it, I suppose, from the old times. So yeah.
Thank you so much, Jen, for joining us today. How can we find and follow Cypher Press?
We have a Instagram and a Twitter account. We're just at Cypher Press. And we also have a website if anyone wants to get in touch. It's www.cypherpress.co.uk, and there's a contact us form on there.
Amazing. And that's C-I-P-H-E-R, if anyone's wondering. Thank you very much, Jen. Take care. We're really looking forward to reading Large Animals.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
I am joined by Jay, who is a queer bookstagrammer who bookstagrams under And Yet The Books. Welcome to the Brighton Book Club, Jay.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You are very welcome indeed. Can you introduce yourself, please, and talk a bit about what you do, where you are, and the kind of books you love?
Okay, yeah, no worries. My name is Jay Moran. I'm 27 years old. I live in Birmingham area in the UK, and I'm transgender and bisexual. So a lot of my content online talks about books as well as what it's like being a trans person living in the UK, transitioning on the NHS and so forth. I live with my partner and our three very horrible cats and our lovely big book collection. So yeah.
I was just talking to Jay before we hit record, and Jay said they were sitting in the book room, and I thought, yeah, okay, that sounds nice.
Yeah, it is. It's a nice place to just, you do find yourself just sitting here though, looking around at all the books and just feeling admiring them all, and then just thinking, I have so many books to read and there are so many more I want to buy.
So Jay, growing up as a non-cis person, do you remember seeing yourself reflected in books?
No, actually. I mean, I don't think I really came across trans literature until I actually came out. Because that wasn't for lack of looking or trying to find any. It was just, there wasn't really, I didn't even really know any trans people, let alone have trans voices to turn to in literature. So I think the first experience I ever had was well into my 20s, and it was a memoir called Trans: A Life by Juliette Jacques, and she talks about her transition, and that was the first time I ever saw a trans person in a book, and that was in my 20s, so nothing growing up at all.
So there is definitely something that needs to change there.
Oh yeah, there's definitely a lot more now. I say especially in the YA genre, there's a lot more, and we're in the bookshop that I work at. We have a reading diversity section for children, and we try and have as many trans children picture books there and informative books for parents as well as for children. But there definitely still needs to be more. There's definitely not enough. I'm the head of fiction, poetry, biography, and I call myself the steward of history because my manager actually runs history, but he lets me tinker with it every now and then.
What's your favourite era?
I do love Victorian literature. That's probably my favourite era to read about. A Victorian era and Tudors as well. I'm a bit basic when it comes to history, I'm afraid. I love the Tudors.
What are some? They did have a good time, didn't they? Actually, to be fair.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Lots of beheadings. When people come to you in the bookshop and they say, I'm worried about my child, they seem to be struggling with their identity a bit, they're 10 years old, what book would you recommend to them?
There's actually a really wonderful picture book that came out a few years ago now, and it's called I Am Jazz, and it's, I can't remember her last name, she's quite an openly trans young child in the US, and she wrote a picture book about growing up and feeling different in her body, and that was the one that that's the one that me and my colleagues usually go to first. There are quite a few now, but I find that they try not to talk so much about, they try as though trans is kind of like a dirty word, I think, in literature sometimes. It's like they try and use, I don't know if you heard recently about the cursed Kristen Bell,
mm-hmm.
the actress. She's written a book about race where it's like a talking about a man who's purple and how he's different. And I think like people try and do that as a way to, it's too scary saying racism or transphobia or homophobia or things like that. So they try and I try and make it a little bit more palatable, I think. And I think that's an issue in trans books, like, are we fit? A dog feels like a cat, and it's, you know what I mean? It's like that kind of narrative, as opposed to a child expressing gender dysphoria or feeling uncomfortable in their own bodies, etc. So
yeah, and actually I guess that can be more damaging than it can be you know, more productive, really, in the longer term. Shall we talk about JK Rowling?
Yeah, go ahead.
And you know, the debate as a whole isn't something that I really feel we're going to be able to, well, I'm particularly going to be able to add much value to, but I would like to know how, you know, because you're Harry Potter age, aren't you?
As I am, yeah.
And how has learning about Jo Rowling's views on the trans community changed the way that you read and you look at Harry Potter?
Harry Potter was quite important in my childhood because I really struggled to read. I was actually in the lowest set for my English group at primary school when I was kind of at that age. And my dad bought me the Philosopher's Stone as a kid, and we read it together, and I became a more confident reader because, or with the help of Harry Potter. And, you know, it has been an integral part of my reading experience, and it will always be a part of my reading story. But over the years, it's always disappointing. It's always a bit heartbreaking when someone that, you know, I think separating the art from the artist is something that can be done sometimes, and it's completely everyone's own prerogative and what you feel comfortable with. But with JK Rowling, I feel that she is so deeply entrenched in Harry Potter, the Harry Potter world and the Harry Potter brand, that for me, it's just looking at that book, I just see her and I see all the, I don't know, I see all the negatives now. I see all the negatives in her books, the things that were always a bit off. I don't know if you remember that she likened Remus Lupin's werewolfism as being a metaphor for HIV. And
oh,
that,
nice.
Like, yeah, she said that it's a metaphor for HIV. And that, but then that saying that's fine, but then you think about the other negative characters in Harry Potter, werewolf characters in Harry Potter, like Fenya Greyback, who is aggressive and attacks children and wants to, you know, turn other people into werewolves. So if you use that HIV metaphor on that character, then all of a sudden that metaphor doesn't become something positive and, you know, trying to inform children about prejudice. In fact, you know what I mean? It becomes a bit muddled and a bit murky.
And I guess it's hard not to kind of rethink your reading of them, you know, despite how much you love them at the time, and thinking, oh gosh, you know, what was, it could be toxic to put that in children's heads, even kind of insipidly.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think a little, as we may know it, those books definitely do affect us even as adults. Things like, I mean, as much as I love Roald Dahl's books, he wasn't very kind to overweight people, shall we say. And there's this whole debate going on with Jack Monroe on Twitter, tweeting about David Walliams's books and how they are quite offensive. They have moments of racism and sexism and fat phobia in them as well.
Absolutely.
And
and
she's bringing highlights to that as well. So
that's actually, that moves me on quite nicely to what I'd like to talk to you about next. So in terms of people having profiles, so I'm talking about heterosexual people having profiles, and we, our last month's book club book was Call Me By Your Name. And we had this really interesting discussion, you know, the prose is beautiful and the setting is wonderful and the writing is great, but this is a highly regarded, in inverted commas, gay literature by ultimately a straight man who apparently first wrote it as a heterosexual couple at the center of the story. And I wanted to talk a bit about that, about the people that actually get the platforms aren't always the people that perhaps should have the platforms. And how important do you think it is for LGBT books to be by LGBT people?
I think it can be done well. One of the books that I love, I will talk about in a bit, but it is written by a cisgender woman, but it does have a trans character in it. But I think with cases like Call Me By Your Name, which, for full clarity, my boyfriend, who is cis and bisexual, he absolutely loves that book. And I haven't read it personally, but he acknowledges that it's not, he told me that fact actually about him originally writing it as a heterosexual couple. And he acknowledges the fact that, you know, Andre Aciman is kind of being held up as this, you know, this figure of LGBT literature when actually he's not part of that community. And it's kind of, and there's a fine line between you know, writing about a topic that interests you and writing interesting characters, and then fetishizing and exploiting gay lives and gay literature. I find, especially with like women, lesbian women tend to be over-sexualized in media, and, you know, I don't quite know. The thing that really stands out, the example of this that really stands out to me is, do you remember the John Boyne incident that happened a year or so ago?
It's ringing a bell. Can you refresh my memory?
He wrote a YA book called My Brother Named Jessica or something along those lines, which was about, it was just told from a perspective of a cis young boy realizing that his sibling is trans, mm-hmm. as in fact female. And John Boyne definitely got his heckles up and definitely got very defensive. And I feel like sometimes it's almost like if you imagine two people standing, John Boyne has the microphone and me as a trans person standing next to him, and he's speaking, and I'm just saying, John, actually that's not right, that's a bit offensive, and he's holding the microphone away from me saying I can talk about what I want to talk about. For example, the author of the Horrid Henry books, she came out in defense of John Boyne saying that I write about a young boy and I'm a woman, so you should be able to write about anything. And I think, yes, you should be able to write about anything, but you need to listen to the people that you're writing about, and you need to listen to when they say, hey, actually, that's offensive. I mean, the title alone of My Brother Named Jessica was just, it's just one of those books, it's clearly made to make people turn their heads, make people mm-hmm. question the title, and it's not, and I don't think it had, I think it had good intentions, or at least I hope it did, because, you know, John Boyne is a great writer. He's a great queer writer. But with his defensiveness, he's kind of destroyed that image of himself as writing something for positive reasons.
That was really interesting. Actually, I don't know if you read A Ladder to the Sky, but it was one of my favourite books of last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a beautiful book. And like I say, you know, he writes some really wonderful work. I think he has done important things for queer literature. But it's just a shame that he is so adamant that he hasn't done anything wrong. Whereas, yeah. you know, I think if he put his hands up and said, I could have worded this a bit better, I'll try my hardest, rather than I should be allowed to write whatever I yeah. want about. And I have the right, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think this in general life, every single day, I think if you just put your hands up and apologize, we could all just move on quite quickly and crack on yeah. and do better things. Jay, what are some really good LGBT books that you have read over your whole reading career?
Ooh, okay. So one of the first queer books that I read and really felt seen by was Jeanette Winterson's memoir, Why Be Happy When You Could Be Normal, mm-hmm. Which her novel, I think it was her debut novel, Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit, that was a semi-autobiographical version of what happened. And this is the memoir about what actually happened. And she grew up in a severely religious household, and her mother was just outright outraged that her daughter was gay, and an exorcism was performed on Jeanette, and she talks about coming out. And but the thing that I loved about that book as well is that, yes, it talks about the hardships of being queer, but it also talked about the beautiful things that come out of it, the beautiful relationships you form, the beautiful way that you can live. And I think as a queer person, you look to literature to, especially when you're younger, you look to literature to see what narrative your life can have, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Because when you're young, you get bombarded with all these messages, or at least I did, that queer people are unhappy, trans people never get jobs, they can't form relationships, they don't have stable relationships with partners, etc. And then so then you go to literature or film or whatever you look to, and then you go and look for a reflection of a story about what you could do and what your life could be like. And I think books like this, where it has positivity and love and, you know, light and hope in it, I think that is so important to queer people, and especially queer youngsters as well.
Absolutely. We're running out of time, actually, amazingly, and I could actually talk to you forever, Jay. So I'm going to just crack on and ask you my last couple of questions.
Yeah, sure.
What books are coming out later on this year and in 2021, if you know of any, as a bookseller, I kind of assume you do, that you're really excited about, queer books?
queer books. Okay, let me have a look at my. I've got an ever growing list on my notes for adding more and more books on there. I'm not a big reader of YA, but I have been quite intrigued by some of the titles that are coming out. For example, Felix Forever, is it something along those lines? It's about a trans boy coming out. I think that sounds really interesting. There's also a book called Memorial by Brian Washington, and he wrote a really wonderful collection of short stories last year called Lot, about being a black gay man in Texas. And he's got a new book coming out, Memorial. So I'm really looking forward to reading that.
Why would you say, or would you say, that it's important for cis heterosexual people to read queer books?
I think especially queer books by queer people, because I see a lot of the time, you know, for example, books like Call Me By Your Name, a lot of people will pick that up and think this is what being queer is like. And in actual fact, that's what a cis straight man thinks being queer is like. Mm-hmm. So I think especially there's so many wonderful memoirs that you can pick up about LGBT people that you can read, like How We Fight for Our Lives by Saeed Jones is a wonderful memoir about being gay. When you read those books, I think one of the most wonderful things about books is that you grow. I mean, you might not really realize it as you're reading it, but you do grow and you learn so much as you're reading, even if it's just reading someone's, you know, what everyone's everyday thoughts. You kind of just see what their lives are like and what lens they look through in the world. And as a trans person, the way I look at the world is not too dissimilar from what, let's say, a straight cis person's vision would be, but the world treats me differently. And I think the more I've been speaking out about the transphobia I've experienced, I think a lot of people have turned around to me and said, I had no idea that you would experience any of that, or people would say such outlandish things to you, or this would happen or that would happen. And I think there's a lot of fear, especially around trans people, especially around trans women, unfortunately, and with narratives like the ones that JK Rowling is pushing. They are dangerous and they do spread so much misinformation. When you breathe the word trans woman in the same, you know, sentence as, you know, a sexual assault or men, that it mixes the information up so much that they become indiscernible from one another and people begin to associate them with each other. And I think if you read books by trans people, by gay people, I hope people would come away and think a little bit more about the words they use, about the way they treat someone, how accepting they are, what they say behind people's backs, what they post about, and who they support as well.
Jay, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate
it. Yeah, it was lovely.
So for anyone listening, how can we follow your Bookstagram account?
My Bookstagram handle is and.yet.the.books. So, and yet the books. It's based on a poem, and the title comes from, and the name comes from a poem. So that's very me. But yeah, that's my Instagram. And it's also my Twitter handle as well.
Our book club book this month is We Have Always Been Here by author Samra Habib. A memoir of hope, faith and love. Samra Habib's story starts with growing up as part of a threatened minority sect in Pakistan and follows her arrival in Canada as a refugee before escaping an arranged marriage at 16. When she realised she was queer, it was yet another way she felt like an outsider. So begins a journey that takes her to the far reaches of the globe to uncover a truth that was with her all along. It shows how Muslims can embrace queer sexuality and families can embrace change. A triumphant story of forgiveness and freedom. We Have Always Been Here is a rallying cry for anyone who has ever felt alone and a testament to the power of fearlessly inhabiting one's true self. So like Erica said, Erica, who actually recommended this book to me originally, Samra uses a really light touch to tell the story. She tells you just enough for you to understand, you know, enough for the story to progress. It's a very, very interesting take on queer identity. So there are really astute observations on sexual attraction in different societies, on friendship and marriage and intimacy, on religion and on spiritual hunger and the kind of strange cross-section between religious identity and sexual identity. And I want to read this section from the book on page 180. So Samra says, When I asked Zainab what advice she would give to young queer Muslims who were looking for support and community, her response gave me chills. I still turn to her words for motivation. We have always been here. It's just that the world wasn't ready for us. Today, with all the political upheaval in the Muslim world, some of us, those who are not daily threatened with death or rejection, have to speak for others. They have to tell stories of a community that is either denied or scorned. Together, through facing distinct realities, we should be united. United in the desire to be, united in the desire to enjoy being free, safe and happy. It is not going to be easy, and one may never reach a reconciliation with oneself or with religion, but at least we should care for each other. In face of the challenges, our sense of community and our shared aspirations for a better world should make us stronger. Like I said, I think Habib writes so really difficult situations and subjects and the kind of difficult crossings between them with a really beautiful, beautiful touch. It's a great memoir and one that is ultimately hopeful and redemptive. So thank you to everyone for listening to our Queer Books LGBT Pride, Not Pride special on Radio Reverb and as a podcast. The music today was from Atom Collect, who you can find on SoundCloud at Atom Collection 2. Our next book club book is a book I'm really excited about and I've seen recommended again and again and again, and it is called Rainbow Milk by Paul Mendes. This is an intersectional coming-of-age story following 19-year-old James McCarthy as he grapples with his racial and sexual identities against the backdrop of a Jehovah's Witness upbringing and the legacies of the Windrush generation. I am so excited to read this book and really, really hope anyone listening might fancy reading along and sharing their thoughts with me, even coming on the show to discuss it. I'm always open to your ideas about what we talk about, so you can drop me an email at btnbookclub@gmail.com, or you can send me a message on Instagram. We are at btnbookclub. Thank you very much to everyone for listening, and we will see you next month.
sunshine.